Hey, everybody out there in Comic Timing Land. This is your co-host of Comic Timing, Brent Cassina, back with the second edition of BK's Bullets out here on the Comic Timing feed. Just got the itch. I mean, I read some stuff. It's not DC, so I wanted to talk about it, and I know that Ian and I have got some other stuff coming up on the show. You know, on Comic Timing, we really discuss, like, I want to say theories and themes and stuff like that. More often than individual issues, although we do have those 22 pages and spotlights and stuff like that. But, you know, a lot of times it's just a general discussion topic. So I'm kind of using this as an outlet to discuss these individual issues and runs and stuff like that that I want to discuss and I think that need more attention to themselves. So today we're going to be talking about two titles that I like. Alias from Marvel's Max imprint is like the first Max comic. And then we're also going to talk about Punisher War Journal, which is ongoing right now. It's a great book. You should pick it up. And you should check out the Alias books, too. So let's dive right into the older comic first, Alias. There was 28 issues of this series. It ran through 2002 to 2004, published by Marvel under their Max imprint, like Maximum. You know, it's like R-rated. It's the adult Marvel universe, basically. So let's get right down to it. It's written by Brian Bendis, and it's art is all done by Michael Gatos, which with a few little stints here and there from Mark Bagley when he's doing the flashback stuff of Jewel, which we'll get into later. I thought this was a good time to discuss this series, especially since New Avengers 38 just came out with Bendis writing and Michael Gatos doing the art, and it's dealing with Jessica Jones and Luke Cage. And since their relationship kind of started in this series, I thought it would be kind of cool to look back on the origins of that at the same time as they're kind of, I guess they're breaking up. I haven't really haven't read the issue yet. So you can just assume there will be no spoilers for New Avengers 38, and it's just for Alias 1 through 28 and Punisher War Journal when we get to that. So Alias, I read all 28 issues. I really enjoyed it. If I had to give it a grade, I'd give it a B. It's not something that every comic fan has to read, but it's something that a good comic fan and one that wants to spread his horizons a little bit and just kind of reach out there and see what else is out there other than mainstream superhero stuff, this is something that they should read. It deals with Jessica Jones, and this is a character created by Brian Michael Bendis. If I'm mistaken, please forgive me, but I'm assuming that because she first appeared here and then she showed up in New Avengers. Married to Luke Cage, so that's where we've seen her so far. And also The Pulse, she was in that as well. Starts off, the first issue is Jessica Jones. She's a private investigator. There's a couple hints throughout, like the first couple issues, that she was a superhero. You know, the cops will show up, or she'll talk to a cop, and they'll be like, hey, weren't you that superhero that one time? And she'll just be like, yeah, okay, moving on. Being a superhero is not something that Jessica Jones wants to deal with. She doesn't want to remember it. And so there's something back in her past that we don't know about, but we do find out, which made her not want to be a superhero anymore and made her kind of shun that part of herself. The first arc is about a missing woman. Some woman comes in right in the first issue and says she's missing her sister. So Jessica Jones starts investigating her and is just so happens to find out where she lives and has a video camera and just so happens to have a video camera on the residence where the sister's living. And then all of a sudden, this guy with, you know, nice blue eyes and long blonde wavy hair cropped short at the ears comes out of the window. And then a minute later, she sees him on the roof, and it's Captain America. And she goes, oh no, what have I stumbled onto? So basically, it comes down to somebody wants Jessica Jones to stumble onto Captain America's real identity, and I think they told her to tape it, so she has it on tape. So it's Captain America having sex. It's not a sex tape, but it's like him finishing up, like him, I guess, putting on his pants and his shirt in a bedroom, and then he goes on the roof and you see it's Captain America. It's not Sharon Carter, so it's just some random woman I guess Captain America was dating at the time. Basically, somebody wants her to release the tape to the public and the press or use it as some sort of blackmail. So, you know, the next couple subsequent issues is Jessica Jones kind of dealing with this fact that she has this huge ticking time bomb in her possession. It could do a lot of great harm if the wrong people got their hands on it. So that's kind of like worries her out and stresses her out. And really, it's this first arc and all this stress and stuff that you really get to see the core of her character. Deep down, she's a good person. But because of some event in her past, she's kind of put up this wall. She has this hard shell around her, and she just doesn't want to deal with anything like that. She just wants to live her day-to-day life and, you know, and kind of get on with it. And she, instead of dealing with her past and dealing with her problems, she's constantly running away from it. And I know a guy like this right now, and it's, You know, I just want to go up to him and be like, you know, you're not going to accomplish anything in life if you don't deal with your problems. You know, if you don't confront this and you don't work this out in your past and you just keep running away from it and ignoring it, and you know, it's not going to help him and it's not going to help her to keep running away from this. It's something that she needs to deal with in order to fully move on like she wants to and get on with her life. The first issue, you know, it starts with fuck. Fuck, fuck, fuckity fuck. You know, Comic Timing, we can say fuck. And this is a Max comic, so there's a lot of fucking here. I think at one point, Luke Cage is doing Jessica Jones doggy style, either in like the first 3 or 4 issues. It was really weird because you see Jessica Jones, her face, and she's just sweaty, and you kind of realize what's going on, and then it pulls back, and it's Luke Cage, like with his big macho hands and stuff, just, yeah, okay, I don't need to say anything else. Needless to say, you see other instances of that same position with Jessica Jones in it later on. I guess she's a fan of Rear Entry. With Scott Lang is in it, Ant-Man. He kind of helps her out that way. I don't exactly remember the other times. So it wasn't like marking him down or anything like that. But this is an adult book. There's adult language, adult themes. There's definitely adult sexual situations, especially in that first issue or two. So this is not a book for kids. The way that Invincible kind of, you know, it's kind of like that mid-teenage range. Alias is definitely for 18 and up, you know, and that's why it's under that Max imprint. So the second arc, we kind of move away from that. It deals kind of with Jessica Jones being like the bodyguard for Matt Murdock while Bendis was writing Alias, he was also writing Daredevil at the same time. So the whole arc where Matt Murdock had his identity exposed and, you know, he had Luke Cage and Jessica Jones as bodyguards, just kind of like a short little arc right there dealing with that kind of time frame. Where you have these conversations between Luke and Jessica, and they're kind of like, you know, Jessica's like, why didn't you call me after we had sex? And Luke's like, what do you want? You know, I'm not dating you. You never said that we were boyfriend and girlfriend after that. You just kind of up and left, and I don't know whether to call you or not. I'm trying to help you out. And, you know, it's a good scene. And it's kind of there. You can kind of start seeing their relationship. And that's kind of, I want to say it's in, like, issue 9 through 12. Somewhere in there. And then Luke Cage and Jessica Jones really picks up at the end of the book in the last arc, which we'll get to later. So the third arc has to do with Jessica Jones, and she's on a case in another town, and she's trying to find this missing girl, and there's some things where, you know, this arc is called Come Home, or Coming Home, something like that. It's just a good old-fashioned detective story. She's in another town, she's out of her element, so she's got to talk to everybody. She's got to talk to the mom, the aunt, the cop, the deadbeat dad, and then she finds out, like, the girl was saying that she's a mutant, and then, you know, oh, it wasn't the girl saying that, it was the other kids, and then she visits, like, the head football player has a thing for this girl who is kind of like a goth girl, a freak, you know what I mean, to those girls that dress weird to be weird and to be think they're unique because they buy their stuff at Hot Topic, where everybody else that's just like them buys their stuff at Hot Topic as well, and that's a whole different, you know, I can't talk about it that Comic Time, it's not comic books, that's a rant for me that I just find it's annoying. Anyway, so she's looking for this young girl who feels lost, an outsider, and she finds her in another town, and she brings him back, and then something bad happens to her dad, and it's just kind of like, the girl's like, why did you bring me back? Because there's nothing to come back to. But in that same issue, there's also a bunch of stuff where the girl is a big fan of, like, Matt Murdock, Daredevil, and just because she's like, oh, Matt Murdock can deal with all this shit, you know, and he can be Daredevil or whatever, and he can be a cool hot lawyer and all this stuff. He's just so cool because he's standing up for himself. And then she's saying all this while she's in the car with Jessica. Then Jessica gets a call, and it's from Matt Murdock, and she's like, yeah, you need me there tomorrow, Matt? Yeah, okay, I'll be there. I'll be there. And the girl's just speechless. I mean, this is the kind of dialogue. It's snap-happy, you know, kind of stuff. And then it's also kind of dark and noir at the same time. It's the kind of stuff that Bendis really excels at. So you can really tell when you're reading this series that he really likes this kind of stuff. This is his home. This is where he lives. And he does it really, really well. The next two arcs has to do with, like, Spider-Girl. Maddie Franklin is living with J. Jonah Jameson. Something weird like that. And Mutant Growth Hormone. That was my least favorite of the arcs. Just because I don't know anything about this incarnation of Spider-Girl. And it felt kind of disjointed at times. At one point, Spider-Woman Jessica Drew shows up. And it kind of attacks Jessica Jones. Just because... for some weird reason, it didn't really make that much sense. It was my least favorite of the arcs. And then the last arc is called The Secret Origin of Jessica Jones. Here is where we find out what exactly was in her past that she didn't want to deal with. And it turns out, and this kind of ties into the first arc of New Avengers, 1 through 6. Remember that scene in the raft breakout where all the supervillains are breaking out and stuff like that? And Luke Cage comes across the Purple Man, and there's kind of like this tense moment and some discussion about what you did to Jessica Jones, and it was never really explained in New Avengers. In that arc, or the next one, or anyone after that, and this whole time I've been reading New Avengers from the beginning, I've been kind of wondering what the hell that was talking about. Well, this arc right here, number 22 through 28 of Alias, is what they're talking about. It deals entirely with Jessica Jones being a superhero, and these flashbacks, they're art stuff by Mark Bagley, which I mentioned before, and she's a superhero. Her name is Jewel. She wears like a white leotard, like with pants, not like the Miss Marvel type, kind of like a tube top, white top with like purple accents. She's got purple hair. She can fly. She's got super strength. Cool stuff like that. But it turns out that at one point she encounters the Purple Man, who is able to make people do what he wants. Basically has like mind control to a really, really extreme level, that he can do it not just for one person, but for everybody around him. So she gets under his control, and instead of like you'd think that a supervillain would do if he got a hold of a hot superhero, like making her have sex with him, stuff like that, instead he just brings her down lower than being that, and Purple Man makes Jessica Jones like beg for him to have sex with her. Like, he has sex with other girls in front of her to make her jealous, even though it's all mind games, just weird, sick, twisted stuff like that. Eventually it escalates to the point where, under Purple Man's control, Jessica Jones attacks the Avengers, and they come after her, and she basically gets like thwacked with Thor's hammer in this really cool scene. That whole issue was just really kind of cool and sad at the same time. But the real arc has to do with people coming forward, Jessica Jones saying, Purple Man has admitted to all of these crimes. There's also a ton more that he hasn't admitted to, and these are our friends and family that are dead, and we want justification. They want justice for them, too. They want the Purple Man to pay for his crimes, or at least admit that he did kill these people. So it has to do with Jessica Jones dealing with her own issues to help these people, because they came to her about it. So eventually she does. The Purple Man breaks out, but this time, instead of Jessica Jones trying to take him down alone, the Avengers come and help her out, put Purple Man back into custody, and it's all cool. But the main thing to come from that arc, besides with her dealing with her own problems and growing as a character, also has to do with her and Luke Cage, because she tells Luke Cage the whole story about what Purple Man did to her, and that's how they bond, and that's how they form the relationship that you see later in The Pulse and New Avengers. And it was just a really cool moment just to see like the birth of this relationship that I've been reading since New Avengers and didn't really know that much about to begin with, and like its roots and stuff like that. That's what really hit me the most, is that relationship at the end of the Alias story. And really, I don't know why it ended at 28, but I can see where it's a good place to stop, because Alias, you know, was about Jessica Jones being this hard-shelled character with a wall up, didn't want to let anybody in. But once she makes these journeys about helping other people other than herself, she's not thinking about herself, she makes friends with a kid from high school, you know, she goes out dating again, she connects with Luke Cage, and then finally she lets it all go, and she deals with the issues that she needed to deal with. She's not the same character anymore, and just to have that same, you know, it's almost kind of like she was in the grim and gritty era of comics, and then she had to deal with some issues to go back to like the Silver Age, or like the new postmodern age where everything's kind of grim and gritty, but at the same time fun. You know, so she had to lift herself up out of the depths of the crap in the 80s into like this modern kind of real person character. I think just to have her story continue under the Alias title and the Max imprint wouldn't have done it any justice if she's kind of this skip happy-go-lucky girl, or maybe not like happy-go-lucky, but happier person than she was. It just wouldn't have felt right, because I think Bendis probably did change his style of writing her. She wasn't as mean, she's not as cold, probably wasn't as snappy with the comebacks, just kind of pulling from New Avengers here, from what I can remember. So just to have the character change on that level and stay in the same book, I think it would have thrown a lot of readers off, and maybe that's why he went over to The Pulse, which was not in the Max imprint, and I think it was drawn by Mark Bagley and had more to do with Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and working for the Daily Bugle than it did her detective stories and stuff like that. So I think it was a good time to quit Alias. You know, it was a good time to stop, and they did transition. So I don't know whether it was a choice of content or story-wise, like I'm saying, or if it was a sales issue or anything like that. All I know is that I really enjoyed reading this book, and if you guys get a chance, you should check it out. I know there are at least 4 or 5 trades of it, so that'll cost you about maybe 12, 15 bucks each. There's also like an Alias hardcover, which has all 28 issues under, you know, in one sitting. On a nice hardcover. I don't know how much that is. I want to say it's like 50 bucks. Let me look. Okay, the Alias Omnibus, Amazon.com has it for, well, I guess the Alias Omnibus might be more difficult to come by than I thought, because Amazon.com has 6 used and new available from $200, which basically means it's out of print. So go check out those trades. Or maybe your comic shop will have it. Maybe your buddy has it. Hell, borrow it from him. You know, just say, hey, I'm borrowing this for 2 weeks. I'll see you later. And just take off with it. All right, so that's it for Alias. Let me take a little break here, and we'll get into Punisher Word Journal real quickly. All right, and we're back. Next up on the agenda is an ongoing series from Marvel Comics right now, Punisher War Journal. Written by Matt Fraction. The current artist on it with the newest issue is Howard Chaykin. Previously, it's been mostly Ariel Olivetti, with Corey Walker and Scott Wegener did the like 2 issues of the Kraven storyline that was just finished up. So I've never read The Punisher before this series. The only exposure I had to him was in the Spider-Man cartoon from the 90s, basically. And I had read the first Garth Ennis Steve Dillon trade, the Welcome Back Frank, and had seen the movie. So that was my Punisher exposure. So I wasn't really interested in hard noir tales with the Punisher killing Russian mobsters and stuff like that. And then once I saw Punisher War Journal number 1 had to do with Civil War, it's coming back and dealing with the superheroes, you know, I thought, all right, well, I'll give this a shot. So number 1 was pretty cool. Had to do with Frank Castle killing Stilt Man. Number 2 and 3 had to do with Captain America and saving Spider-Man's ass, basically. And I really thought the art in these was really cool. Even though it was kind of stiff at times, I mean, Ariel Olivetti has this computer. I don't know if it's computer generated, if he does it on like a computer pad, like Howard Porter was doing his Trials of Shazam stuff, or if it's simply a matter of him like drawing it out on a piece of paper and then the colorist, or I don't know if he does the colors, I want to say he does the black and whites, or him, you know, scanning it into the computer and then he lays down all the gray tones in the computer and kind of renders it digitally and then hands it over to the colorist. I want to say it's the second version where he draws it out by hand, scans it in, renders it digitally with black and white, and then hands it over to the colorist, because they did print a black and white issue of number 1. And they also did that with Simone Bianchi's first Wolverine issue. It was a craptastic story, but the art was cool, and he renders it in black and white. So 2 and 3 had to do with the Civil War and Captain America punching him out. And I thought those were really cool because you saw how Frank looked up to Captain America, and it kind of explained his actions, even though Civil War was kind of past that point. But then at the same time, I think Civil War was late, so these issues were coming out instead of Civil War, so it's just kind of like, all right, I like this part of the story, I'm gonna keep getting this, and then after that, I'll see how it goes. So issue number 4 had a guest villain, Mike Deodato. Punisher basically blows up a bar for supervillains. They're having a wake for Stilt Man, and he blows up the bar or the church at the funeral, something like that, just like a big badass statement of, hello supervillains, I'm back, watch your backs. Number 5 had to do with Punisher in like New York City, and there's some mob thing, and S.H.I.E.L.D. gets involved. And it was like at this point where I really started getting interested in the actual storyline of Punisher War Journal. There are like intermittent arcs here and there, but the real storyline is about Frank and G.W. Bridge. And G.W. Bridge, I had first seen him in this book only, so I don't know if his past or anything like that. All I know is he's an old, big, heavy, muscular black man with white hair, and he's cool. And he works for S.H.I.E.L.D., and he's got a vendetta against Frank Castle. So that vendetta is basically like the overarching storyline with Punisher War Journal, is Frank Castle and G.W. Bridge. So Frank will go on an adventure, and then G.W. Bridge is always like hot on his tail. You know what I mean? He's investigating about Frank, or he's looking into his past, or he's like 2 steps behind Frank, and he's about to catch him, or one time he let him go, and stuff like that. It's just wacky. Anyway, so the second real story arc from Punisher War Journal was kind of picked up from the end of Civil War number 7, where Punisher had Cap's mask. And here's where I kind of got lost in the series. Matt Fraction did a whole lot of this jumping back and forth between things. It really kind of felt like Alias at times. Not the comic series, but the actual television series with Jennifer Garner. On the TV show, they would start off with Jennifer Garner tied to a chair, hands behind her back, in some real danger, getting the crap kicked out of her. And then they'd put her in, this cliffhanger mode, and then it'd go to, the title screen, Alias, bum bum. Well, that's a Law & Order thing. Anyway, and then after the commercial break, it would go back, and it would say, 3 days earlier, 3 weeks earlier, stuff like that. So the second arc of Punisher War Journal really had, that, I want to call it the Alias syndrome, really, really bad. Because it would do it in every single issue. Now, if issue number 7... or 6 was when it started. If issue 6 had started that, and we had had that big crap-kicking fight thing with, Frank in this cliffhanger, he's about to get shot, and then jump back and tell the story linearly, we're gonna Tarantino it, we're gonna go back to the beginning kind of thing from Pulp Fiction and how Dan Cook says that all the time. If they'd done that, I would have been a lot happier with the story. But instead, each issue of that storyline kind of starts out with Frank still tied up at the same spot, Frank in the present. And each issue kind of moves Frank in the present forward a little bit, and then we're always jumping back a certain amount. So it kind of felt like we were going in the same spot, because we started out in the present, moved forward 2 feet, and then went back, 18 feet for distance. The next issue, we were started out at that, plus 2 feet, and then we went back to negative 14 feet. So, the distance between the storytelling times was always the same. You know what I mean? There's a medium distance. So it really bogged down the story, I thought. And even though the art was cool, Ariel Olivetti was still on the book, doing a kick-ass job. It just kind of weighed it down for me a little bit. And kind of, it didn't really feel like I got that much enjoyment out of it. Because I wanted to read Frank Castle, Captain America, Star Man, star on his chest, head thing. But that's not what I got, because the pacing of the storyline was different. So what really got me back into this series, though, was issue number 12, Punisher War Journal World War Hulk tie-in. Yes, I know what you're thinking. Oh my god. Thank you, Brent. I'm glad it got you back in that title. Well, you guys are wrong, because issue 12 and issue 13 after that, which had nothing to do with World War Hulk, issue 12 was an awesome, badass issue. Ariel Olivetti is leaving the series, and I want to say that issue was double-sized or something, because I remember reading it and it was just ginormous. Yeah, 48 pages, issue 12 was. Basically, the cover on here has Frank going up against the Hulk, the main cover, not the variant, and that didn't happen in the issue at all, and I'm so thankful that it didn't, because it had Frank being the street-level character, and instead of dealing with the Hulk, he was dealing with, the alien hivelings and, the insect guys that were hanging around with Hulk and stuff like that, and he was saving people from them, which you didn't see in the main World War Hulk series. And really, only took one issue of this to do. So it was Frank meets these people, they're under attack, and then he makes this plan to get them out of the city, and then he does it. So that was what that issue was. It was 48 pages, it was great. If you're gonna read one issue of Punisher War Journal, I'd say go pick up that, and then the following issue, 13, is pretty damn good too. So issue 13 starts the recently finished the Kraven storyline. Kraven's son, the original Kraven's son, is back as Kraven the Hunter. He's kind of whacked out. There's a supervillain zoo. It's just crazy, crazy stuff. It's crazy. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. And the issues are, the first one's done by Corey Walker of Invincible fame. Remember, he was the first artist on Invincible, kind of created all the characters and stuff. For his art there, I thought it was better than the stuff he'd done in Invincible. Remember, in the last BK's Bullets, I was talking about him and thought he was really kind of stiff and angular and still life kind of thing, even though he's more of a cartoony artist, especially when you look at him next to Ariel Olivetti. But I liked his stuff there a lot more than I did in Invincible. But then I thought he was gonna do the other two issues, and then he just drops out of nowhere, and then we have Scott Wegener filling in for 14 and 15. And he has a similar style just to Corey Wagner, so he's filling in a good job. So there wasn't really a jarring jump between art, so that was good. The newest issue, 16, Howard Chaykin's on it, and I'm looking forward to reading that. It's in my DCBS shipment. I got it today, so I'm gonna crack into that after I'm done recording this, which I am. So thank you guys for listening. I know my voice is kind of going out here real quick. Sorry about the last one, the Invincible one. I don't know what happened with that one. It was good. Thank you, Bob Breitoff, for your nice comment saying that you enjoyed it. But when I listened to it, all the ums and uhs just killed me. I know I said in there I was going to throw it up there and just leave it unedited, but I really need to go back into these and cut out all the stuff. So I will be editing these from now on. And I think with that one, I did the VK's Bullets for Raging Bullets. I did Emperor Joker first, and then I recorded that one at the same time. And I edited Emperor Joker first because I wanted to get it out to Sean and Jim. And then I just threw some stuff on the end of the Invincible one with the music and stuff, and leveled it and just threw it up to Ian. I was like, here, you put this up. And then after I listened to it, after you put it on the feed, I was just kind of like, oh man, I messed that up. So I'm sorry guys for that one. It won't happen again. And I know I had a crap load of ums and uhs in this episode, so I'm going to go back and edit all 30 minutes or whatever, so you guys won't have to listen to me go because I know it was really bad last time, and I know it's bad this time because my voice is going out. So I will see you guys later. Thanks for listening, and keep reading those good comics.